On our recording this month, I want to address two questions, one practice-related, the other financial. I want to start on the practice side. Now, although this question has to do with marketing, it really has far-reaching implications on many other aspects of the practice. Since Whitehall's been offering marketing seminars, as well as our own line of community mailers, we're getting more and more requests for what I call marketing feasibility evaluations. That means doctors want to know if they'd benefit from spending money on paid advertising. As I mentioned on last month's audio program, there's actually a lot of good that can come out of just getting ready to advertise. Once you know, for example, that you're about to risk several $1,000s per month on paid advertising, you tend to look more critically at your own reception staff and how they're answering the phone. You start to question the effectiveness of your own treatment plan presentation skills. You look more critically at the condition of the carpeting and paint in your reception room. In short, you start to wonder if you're really ready to impress the uninitiated, price-sensitive strangers that paid advertising seems to attract. In this month, I want to talk about a concept that can not only be applied to the marketing feasibility of a practice, but to other important decisions that now face many of our clients. I'm talking about what we here at Whitehall call displacement syndrome. You see, displacement is the silent practice killer. It quietly drains the energy from great doctors and capable, dedicated staff. Let me give you a few examples of displacement. Now, please keep in mind that there are actually three different versions of this same practice affliction we call displacement. The one I'm about to describe has to do with new patient displacement. I'm actually able to observe this form of displacement most often when my clients purchase neighboring practices from older doctors about to take full retirement. The purchasing doctor is typically lured into making this type of purchase for one of two reasons. First, he or she mistakenly thinks that they have additional peak demand productive capacity. Second, that they now have the opportunity to fill this fictional capacity with patients purchased at bargain prices from the doctor that's now selling. That's right, retiring doctors sometimes go back to the well too often. That is, they've stayed in the practice until their age, and their lack of energy slowly depletes their following. The retiring doctor then sells the carcass of a once robust practice for bargain prices to doctors who are unaware of the coming displacement. And strangely enough, the purchaser, who I'll hereafter refer to as the victim, can actually spend $100,000 or $200,000 for this shell of a practice and ultimately end up having wasted his or her entire investment. And this can all occur without the victim doctor ever knowing that he or she has been fleeced. See, the problem isn't that the purchasing doctor won't, over the coming year, see many of the purchased patients show up in the practice. The problem is that a year after buying this dying practice, the purchasing doctor ends up with the same number of monthly new patients that he or she had before the purchase or the merger. That's right, in the end, even though the practice may now be made up of a good portion of the purchased patients, the overall practice hasn't grown a bit. I've seen this occur so often that I start to wonder if I'm the only one who's noticed it. And this isn't subjective. If you've purchased a practice and seen your new patient statistics remain the same after some time, the numbers are objectively verifying what I'm saying. You bought and merged a practice only to find that you lost as many regular or would-be regular patients as you gained from purchasing the neighboring practice. When a doctor calls to ask me the advisability of these ventures, I feel compelled to give them the same displacement lecture that I'm now giving you. This example of merging one practice into two, to me, is new patient displacement personified. It's also displacement quantified. That's right. It's right there in the monthly statistics and in the yearly new patient statistics. I call displacement the silent killer, and rightfully so. The process I'm describing can take place over a year's time so gradually you'll never even come close to seeing the loss of patients that you actually had already won through your own referrals or neighborhood proximity. It's like watching to see the movement of the hour hand of a clock. It's just too slow for you to actually perceive. I use this example, the one of merging two practices, not because all of you are about to buy a neighboring practice, but because many of you are interested in merging your existing practice with a new patient advertising or internal marketing component. That's right. Many of you are trying to build a new following in much the same way a doctor goes about buying a neighborhood practice or a neighboring practice. The difference is that the would-be practice marketer has the disadvantage of buying skittish, tentative patients, whereas the would-be practice purchaser has the disadvantage of trying to squeeze a large number of less skittish patients into a practice that already has a full peak demand time of the day. I think you see the problem. Both of these approaches, purchasing or marketing, are really fraught with danger. The thought that a doctor, long frustrated through failed marketing attempts, can quickly fix his new patient shortage through purchasing an additional going concern practice, it's not only erroneous, but will likely prove in the long run that displacement was already occurring in the purchaser's practice even before the neighboring practice was secured. Yes, the neighboring practice purchase story perfectly illustrates new patient displacement, and unfortunately, we see it quite often. And yes, it's easy to see how slow and subtly this could occur. My question for you is, could this be occurring right now in your own practice, even though you haven't recently purchased or merged with a neighboring practice or are taking on an advertising project? I told you at the beginning of this recording that we're going to be talking about more than one type of displacement. Type one is new patient displacement. This is the type that everyone tends to worry about because you pay attention to it about the time you're beginning to spend money on paid advertising. The second type of displacement is revenue or production displacement. This is probably the more common, even more so than new patient displacement, but it's still just as subtle and difficult to identify. Revenue displacement has occurred in your practice if you've seen your new patients increase noticeably, but your monthly production is still what it was before the marketing or whatever you did to increase the new patient flow. The third type of displacement, to me, is the most discouraging of all. That is net profit displacement. This occurs if new patients and production increase, only to see your net profit unchanged, or worse, even diminished. I think you're starting to get the big picture of displacement. You managed to finally increase the demand for your services. Maybe you've improved your consumerism, and it's starting to pay off. But in the end, even though you've increased new patients and production, you're finally cheated out of the payoff. And this is what I want to talk about on this month's recording. These three deadly forms of practice displacement. Now granted, just having you become more aware of the syndrome is going to be beneficial, but I don't want to stop there. I want to delve into exactly how these three types of displacement occur. How can you identify these three silent practice saboteurs before they exhaust you and your team? All right, let's start out with new patient displacement, and I've already pointed out how subtly this problem occurs. I know this because only a few offices are even aware it's going on, and in nearly every one of these cases, it's the staff, not the doctor, that pick up on the problem. That's right, the doctor is the last one to know. I was in an office a while back in California, a superstar office. The doctor told me that he was ready for growth. He already had over 4,000 square feet under roof in the clinic and a track record of outstanding patient satisfaction. The doctor told me that he could easily handle 20% more new patients than he was now processing. But when I questioned the team, they told me, and I quote, "Beyond his current new patient load, for every new patient we add, he'll lose at least one patient from the practice." Now, I cite this example because both staff and doctor are among my very best practices. The doctor is currently producing exactly 165% of the new patients we think a single doctor can process. In other words, he's not some wannabe big hitter. He's a real thing. But from a new patient standpoint, he's as delusional as everyone else we work with. One of the reasons that new patient displacement is so hard to spot is that even the patients themselves don't know they're being displaced. See, it can take many months, sometimes a year or more, to finally come to the conclusion that it's just too much trouble to get into your practice. See, many times when the patients finally do show up at another one of my clients' practices, they can't even identify why they left their last doctor. They'll say something like, "Ah, it just got to be too much trouble to get in there." See, up to a point, the patient actually thinks they're still your patient. That's why they never see, or that is why you never see, any of the obvious signs that indicate you're losing as many patients as you're gaining. Another reason you'll never see new patient displacement occur right before your eyes is that you don't understand the underlying dynamics of the new patient to staff relationship. Most of us think that when new patients phone the office, they're ready to step directly onto the appointment book. In truth, scheduling a new patient is more like a contact sport. The staff person has to reach out and pull the prospective patient onto the schedule. All the staff has to do to lose a patient is fail to reach out to the prospect. If any of you have had one of our audit calls done on your front desk, you already know what I'm talking about. Every so often, well, it's about every other day, we get one that's so interesting, so disastrous, that we all sit around here at Whitehall and listen to it. And yes, they're funny, but you know, I'm thinking that somewhere there's a doctor that this is actually his or her office, and the phone is being answered in a way that the doctor is going to be horrified when they hear this call plate. If you were to record the actual patient encounters that are now taking place at your front desk, as we have with so many of our clients, you'd see what I'm talking about firsthand. See, the staff person who is either untrained, uninterested, or unconsciously convinced that the practice is already too busy, they're simply going to fail to reach out. That's all they have to do, is not reach out, and the whole thing falls apart. See, if you were to pick up the receiver right now and listen in on one of the calls that are coming into your front desk, you'd hear a prospective patient ask questions to your staff person, who would then answer them. That's all you would hear. The prospect would then thank your receptionist for his or her help and then hang up. You think I'm just talking about the occasional tentative new patient, you know, the ones that really weren't good people? But I'm not. This is the norm, not the exception. And I think you're starting to understand what I'm saying. Scheduling new patients requires a conscious, skilled outreach, or you're left with only the most pain-driven referrals to force their way past your receptionist. Just for a moment, imagine a continuum of new patient motivation. Some patients are highly motivated to get onto your schedule. Others couldn't be persuaded unless you offered to pay for their care yourself and send a car for them. The majority, however, fall in the middle ground, where a conscious effort is required on the part of your receptionist to tie them down to a specific appointment time. I only mention this so you can see how difficult it would be to actually catch your receptionist in the act of going passive during an incoming new patient call. And I know some of you are thinking that this is your cue to jump on your receptionist, or get her using the Jay Geyer scripts, or have our audit call service give your front desk a shakedown. But that may not address the real underlying problem. The real problem might be that your receptionist knows consciously or unconsciously that you, like my friend in California, are losing a new patient for every new patient that's added to your schedule. So how do you know if you're a victim of new patient displacement? The easiest way to spot it is to do some marketing. If you find that your new patients didn't increase, but the marketing actually brought in a few patients that you were able to trace to the marketing, well, you passed the test. You have displacement. When I watch doctors do this, it never fails to surprise them. When you can show them that 8 new patients came from their ad, but that their total new patient numbers for the month remained constant, they're shocked. Because regardless of what I might have taught them at the seminar or in person, they thought they would be the exception. They thought they would be the one doctor in 1,000 who could actually see their own patient displacement occur. Another tip-off is when you see new patients come from a different source each month. Large groups of people tend to behave in a fairly predictable way. It's unlikely that everyone will just pick up the phone and call out of the phone book in June, but in July, they all come from referrals. This is caused by the fact that only so many new patients are allowed into the practice, that is, your practice, in any given month. If the total new patients each month remains fairly constant, but the source from which they originate varies, then you are displacing patients. See, another interesting way to detect this problem is what we call the falling revenue test. If you see revenue fall while new patients remain the same, and you've had an advertising campaign in progress, you are definitely a displacement victim. If new patients remain constant and more of them are coming from non-referral sources, it's common to see production per patient drop. All right, I think you're beginning to get the picture. You now have enough information to tell if you're currently exchanging one new patient for another. We call that new patient displacement. All right, let's look at another category of displacement, what we call production displacement. This problem is reserved for the elite practitioners who do manage somehow to increase their new patient flow. But they tragically find out later that they have not been able to increase their income in spite of the new patients. I hope you were paying close attention when we covered new patient displacement. If you recall, I pointed out that all you have to do to quietly displace new patients is not to reach out to them when they call. This is especially true of those patients who fall at the marginal end of the patient motivational spectrum. The same is true with production displacement. Yes, the obvious cause of production displacement would be not hiring enough staff or not getting the doctor to move faster. What you're not going to see, however, is that if your new patient numbers have increased because of a marketing campaign of any sort, or you've added enough capacity to let some convenience or walk-in types, that is, simply stated, unreferred patients, into the practice, you're going to see your production stagnant because of the unstated need to improve practice systems. That's right. If you begin to suddenly process more unreferred patients through the practice, and you don't improve everything from your case presentation to the flexibility of your financial arrangements and everything in between, you're going to see production stay flat regardless of how many new patients walk through the door. See, unreferred patients take a toll on a practice. They require more preemption. You have to stay a step ahead of the walk-in patient, or you're going to find them buying less care, missing more appointments than a regular referral patient would. And yes, there's always the problem of surge capacity abuse. Most of you have heard me talk about this at seminars or on past recordings. This is where the doctor, or maybe in a few cases the staff, mistakenly thinks that they can process more new patients without adding staff because they've done it before. Yes, they've done it before, but it was unsustainable back when they did it. You see, there's hard and fast rules about how many staff it takes to process a given number of patients. If you're lucky enough to have a motivated, highly skilled receptionist, you're going to see your new patients increase. But if you're unlucky enough to fail to see the need to beef up the rest of the team as well as speed up the doctor, you're going to see flat production regardless of the number of new patients that fight their way past your front desk. You're going to need one non-clinical staff person for every 18 new patients that are processed in your practice per month. You're going to need one chairside staff person per operatory you intend to seriously utilize.